This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for listening to the Evening Edition. So if you're anything like me, you don't just love watching movies, you also love listening to two complete strangers jabber on about movies. You know, dissecting those themes, comparing and contrasting, digging deep, getting all meta, showing off their deep and profound knowledge of cinema. Which is why you need to check out the all-new At The Movies podcast with my buddy Umapagan Ambige Pagan. I really think he loves talking about movies more than he does watching them. And to listen, just log on to bfm.my/movies.
If you are a Malaysian, or if you grew up in Malaysia, or attended Malaysian public schools, you must be very familiar with the Parameswara tale, the Srivijayan prince who fled his kingdom after the Majapahit invasion and found his somewhat dirty way into Singapore and then into the old Malacca. I said somewhat dirty way because Parameswara killed the Siamese lord of Singapore before he appointed himself as the new ruler of Singapore. He then ran again to Malacca after the Siamese king found out about the murder and established a new kingdom in Malacca. Historical disputes and disagreements aside, Malaysians have been convinced that Parameswara's journey and this Malacca kingdom he founded was the beginning of the history of the Peninsula Malaysia, if not the beginning of the history of Malaysia. Parameswara's life, in a way, was grounded on wars, politics, and most of all, migration. Parameswara was a political migrant. He was a war migrant. And that just made Malaysian history a migrant history. That was about 600 years ago. Fast forward to 2016, Malaysia is still holding strong to its migration tradition. Our multiracial society reflects that. And the coming and going of the recent waves of economic migrants also reflect this very tradition. There are old immigrants and there are new immigrants. But of course, with migration, there are cultural shifts, there are cultural frictions. While we are proud of our multiculturalism, we have to admit that we haven't been able to always embrace everything very well. Since the past 11 weeks, I brought you personal stories from Malaysia's new immigrants. These are the immigrants who have been in this country for less than 15 years. Many were from Indonesia, some were from Bangladesh, others were from the Middle East. They all have very different backgrounds, but their narratives revolve around one common theme: home. This week, on the Evening Edition Migrant Series Far From Home's final episode, I'd like to table these stories again and try to make sense of these migrants' presence in Malaysia. I'd like to understand the locals and migrant dynamic, the new and old immigrants dynamic. There are estimated 6 million non-citizens in Malaysia right now, but their presence is hardly discussed. Today, in the episode, The Migrants' Presence, I'll be speaking to a few experts who look into Malaysia's immigrant history and what does it mean to Malaysia's migration tradition.
I have always taken I take a very historical and cultural approach to immigration. And when you talk about Malaysia, and not just Malaysia, but really the Southeast Asian region, you're talking about a very bastardized region. You know, it has no reality, it has no cultural and community reality apart from one of movement. We are a seafaring people. And that has always been the case in Malaysia and Southeast Asia.
Edin Koo is an arts and culture journalist and teaches at the University of Malaya.
Malaysia, of course, is very complicated. It's a very complicated country. And one of the reasons that we have initiated so many policies, for example, that seem to favor race or, you know, seem to favor particular communities and it's an attempt for us to streamline and make sense of essentially what is really a, on the cultural and artistic side, a really wonderful mess, but on the bureaucratic and administrative side and the political side, of course, extremely, extremely difficult. Any community and any nation or country that is communally based will necessarily as a result of symbiosis, basically, organically develop a sense of what you would call a sense of otherness, a sense of xenophobia, a sense of tribalism, a sense of racialism, if not outright racism. And all these things are only accentuated, you see, as our modern and contemporary experience begins to harness aspects of race and community identification and otherness. This is, of course, what has happened very strongly, especially in the past 40 years of Malaysia's experience. We, I think, acknowledge very negatively the presence of this one third, but we do it in very negative terms, in the sense that, you know, we are being swarmed, we are being taken over, we are being, overwhelmed by an onslaught of immigration. We never point out that a lot of this, of the coming and going, has taken place due to economic necessity.
And the early migration trends then progress into a more forced ones, driven by economic and political interests, which in a way still resembles Parameswara's story.
If we look from the historical point of view, the early migrations are quite natural. And it is a welcome process.
Dr. Hafizi Muhammad Noor is a historian and also the chairman of the non-profit MyCare, the Humanitarian Care Malaysia.
It enriches the culture, it enriches the indigenous group. But as time goes by, especially the coming of the colonial powers, they actually upset the dynamics. It's no longer a natural process, but rather being a force, it becomes an artificial process of integration. That's why we are not seeing the ethnic relationship is in its best form of late. And if we look at more recent times, because of the economic opportunities, we are seeing now a new set of migrants, those who are driven by economic reasons. The Indonesians especially, the Bangladeshis, even ethnic Chinese from mainland China, and also the Vietnamese, the Nepalese, they are coming here for obvious economic reasons. Yeah? And that also couple the unclear, shall I say, unclear government policy. Yeah? Because we are hearing this cynical comments, like, for example, in Sabah, in Sarawak, the migrants from the Philippines, especially the Sulu people, they were brought in, they were given ICs, and they were given rights of citizenship, not through due process of law, but for political reason. This has been the talk that has been going around, even though we cannot establish what is the truth. But there seems to be the understanding ethnic composition now is not due to economic reasons anymore, especially in some parts of Malaysia, but it's due to political agenda that is pushing it.
When we talk about migration in Malaysia, we've mostly focused the discussion on the blue-collar migrants in Malaysia, and their presence is usually acknowledged in a somewhat negative way. But in a lot of ways, these comments by Dr. Hafizi and Eden Koo show that there's always a pulling factor in migration politics. When we come back, we'll continue talking about Malaysia's migration dynamic. Stay tuned.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
Malaysia's wealth of natural resources has made it one of the fastest growing economies in Southeast Asia. It's the land of opportunities in this corner of the world, the go-to place for people like Mahfuz Jalani, who left home in East Java, Indonesia 15 years ago to be a construction worker in KL.
Buruh migran yang di sini maksudnya tuh bukan pekerja yang profesional, terkenal dengan 3D, difficult, dirty, dan dangerous.
Mahfuz dreams of a good life and he is looking for it here in Malaysia, 1,600 miles away from his family.
Umumnya pekerja migran terpaksa bekerja seperti itu demi ekonomi keluarga, demi masa depan anak yang mungkin tidak dapat diraih di Indonesia untuk saat ini.
As a newly industrialized country, Malaysia continues to attract migrants from its neighbors.
Immigration problem here really blew up from the 1980s onwards, when all of a sudden we began to discover new resources, we began to get richer. By the 1990s, of course, we were one of the raging Asian tigers and so on. So avenues in the economy opened up.
Edin Koo is an arts and culture journalist and teaches at the University of Malaya in Kuala Lumpur.
And so we brought in workers from these various countries and they have continued to stay. And, you know, great trans-migratory relationships are being forged.
All these factors have made human trafficking very profitable, with millions of migrants like Mahfuz needing help to get into Malaysia. Mahfuz was voluntarily trafficked into Malaysia twice in late 1990s and also in early 2000 for the sake of chasing better economic opportunities in Malaysia. He was also deported twice, but because he was embarrassed to return home as a failure, he forced himself to come to Malaysia illegally again. Here's Mahfuz recounting his experience having to swim to the Malaysian border after his traffickers left him close to the Malaysian beach.
Pakai speedboat masuknya malam hari, dan satu speedboat itu ada sampai 70 orang. Setelah itu, ketika memasuki perairan Malaysia, agak-agak sampai leher air laut, jadi orang semua disuruh melompat semua. Setelah melompat semua, 70 orang, speed itu langsung keluar lagi dari perairan Malaysia. Jadi sudah ada yang menunggu agen yang di Malaysia yang akan menyalurkan ke lokasi-lokasi proyek yang dituju. Tapi itu risiko, memang orang ilegal, migran yang memasuki secara ilegal, memang itu risikonya.
Malaysia's strict immigration policies are at odds with the much earlier waves of immigration in Malaysian history that created the country it is today. For centuries, the country attracted traders and colonial powers who then brought in laborers from abroad, making Malaysia the truly Asian melting pot it is today. It's a migrant heaven, it's a migrant nation, and it has been one longer than anyone can remember.
A state formation began sometime in the 15th century with immigrants from the Indonesian islands. By the 19th century, we saw large waves of formal immigration. The Chinese came to work the tin mines, the Indians came to work the rubber plantations that were emerging here. All the sources of wealth that made Malaya essentially one of the richest colonies, if not the richest colony in the British Empire.
Chinese, Indians, and the Malay immigrants are now Malaysians, naturalized as citizens during the independence in the 50s. But since then, Malaysia welcomes immigrants to work but not to stay. New immigrants like Mahfuz help build the country that keeps them out.
Dah berapa bangunan dibina di Malaysia ni?
Satu sempat berpikir, satu selalu buat rumah bangunan untuk orang lain, tapi satu kapan untuk buat sendiri? Berarti sudah berapa banyak?
Mahfuz now has got his papers and is now working here legally. Here is Mahfuz contextualizing his migrant experience.
Untuk mendapatkan hidup yang lebih baik, untuk mendapatkan apa yang kita inginkan, kita harus bermigrasi. Baik bermigrasi di dalam negara sendiri atau bermigrasi lintas negara. Memang itu sudah lumrah manusia.
Sepanjang ekonomi Malaysia, tingkat ekonomi Malaysia masih lebih tinggi dari tingkat ekonomi para pekerja asing yang telah terbiasa di Malaysia, sepanjang itu masih ada perbeda yang jauh, kedatangan pekerja itu ke Malaysia tidak akan berhenti. Sampai kiamat, tidak akan berhenti. Cuman orangnya bertukar-tukar. Orangnya bertukar-ganti, bertukar-ganti.
Khairuddin Azhar is the director of Indonesian Sociological Research Center.
Nanti kalau ekonomi Nepal, Bangladesh, Myanmar, Indonesia sudah hampir setara dengan Malaysia, pada saat itu pekerja-pekerja berkenaan akan berkurang drastis datang ke Malaysia. Ini faktor ekonomi, ini semua faktor ekonomi. Itu dengan sendirinya akan berkurang. Jadi sepanjang perbedaan itu masih jauh, ya, pekerja dari negara-negara berkenaan akan terus datang ke Malaysia. Ini hanya bertukar manusianya.
Coming up, I'll be speaking to a few more migrants about their experience. Stay tuned.
Hey, I hope you're really enjoying this podcast. Well, you must be. You've made it this far. Anyway, when you're done listening to this one, don't forget to check out At The Movies with my buddy Umapagan Ampike Pagan. It'll satisfy all your movie podcast cravings, but only after you're done listening to this one. Remember, it's bfm.my/movies.
It's not only the work that attracts the migrants. Malaysia presents itself as a progressive, industrialized Muslim nation, becoming a magnet for Muslim migrants and refugees like Ghani. Ghani escaped the persecution of Muslims in Myanmar. Malaysia now feels like home.
Kesusahan Abdul Ghani ini memang di agama dan bangsa. Sewaktu bila saya berada di Malaysia, saya selalu gembira dan bertenanglah sebab apa majoritinya Islam berbanding dengan daerah yang saya lahir. Dan Malaysia alhamdulillah lah lebih baik di sini, lebih ada keselamatan untuk saya.
Ghani is a Rohingya Muslim, part of an ethnic minority in Myanmar. He is one of the 40,000 Rohingya refugees in Malaysia, which is a result of the prolonged conflicts between Buddhists and Muslims in Myanmar. After a race riot in 2012 that left 90,000 homeless, Myanmar stopped recognizing Rohingyas as citizens, leaving them stateless and stranded. Ghani came to Malaysia 25 years ago and helped build the Twin Towers as an undocumented construction worker.
1995 saya start kerja pemasangan cermin di KLCC.
Malaysia is also seen as heaven for Muslims fleeing the chaos of war in the Middle East, like Raid Khaldun, an Iraqi Sunni who seeks a peaceful coexistence not found back home. At his shop, Raid welcomes customers from all walks of life, including Imad, a Kurdish man from Iraq.
Different nation, not Arab, Kurdish people.
So you're Kurdish?
Yeah, Kurdish people.
He's not Kurdish.
No, he's not Kurdish, but he's our, yeah.
You know, that's what I'm talking about. Here, everybody here, Sunni, Shi'i, Kurdish, all of us brothers.
Ryan left Baghdad after the American invasion in Iraq 10 years ago. As a successful businessman, he moved first to Egypt and came to Malaysia right before the Egyptian Revolution hit in 2011.
Before those dirty wars, Iraq was the best country in the world. I am Arabic Sunni and my wife Kurdish, my son-in-law Shia. So it's a small samples of the Iraqi society. You cannot imagine the life, how beautiful, how easy, people, how friendly there.
Raid moved here because of Malaysia's reputation as a Muslim country. But citizenship application could take up more than 20 years without any guarantee for approval. Although there's very limited path to citizenship for Raid, he enjoys a comfortable life in Malaysia. He holds an investor's visa, so he's allowed to work. He owns three Middle Eastern stores in Serdang, outside of KL, where many Arabs live.
I saw the country, very nice country. People very friendly. We saw there is a lot of Arab population here, so we decided to ship here.
This is just a slice of the new immigrants' lives in Malaysia, but most of these stories exist outside of Malaysians' realm of consciousness. Malaysia vigorously paints itself as the welcoming multiracial nation. And with our excitement to market our Muslim majority demographic, this has also attracted many migrants into Malaysia, but they are not always informed of Malaysians' lack of discussion about the migrants. Here is Dr. Hafizi from MyCare Humanitarian Nonprofit.
And we have
migrants from the Middle East, from the war-torn conflict areas, the Palestinians, the Syrians, the Iraqis, and they normally use Indonesia and Malaysia as a hub for them to access first world countries like Australia, Europe, and also the Americas. But like we are seeing today, they have not been welcomed, especially by Australia, and also it's not an easy process for them to gain citizenship in the US. It's not like in the 60s or in the 70s, where it's much easier back then. We had an experience with the Vietnamese boat people at one time in the 70s, early 70s. They were temporarily located at Pulau Bidung in Terengganu, and then gradually they gained citizenship in the West, especially in America. But things may not work as it used to, especially at this time. Yeah, so this is giving us a lot of issues. Yeah? Not easy to handle, and it's given an impression that Malaysia is a Muslim country, and we are supposed to host our brothers and sisters from these conflict areas. But it's not as straightforward as that. We have to look from the legal aspect, we have to look from the political aspect, we have to look from the social aspect. What needs to be addressed is, for instance, like Myanmar, the problem has to be resolved at its root. In other words, Myanmar has to be pressured into dealing with this situation. They have been discriminating, they have been oppressing their own ethnic Rohingyas, and they should be told off through ASEAN or through some other platform to deal with this situation, so that it will not become a burden to their neighbouring countries, Indonesia and Malaysia. But it's not easy, because ASEAN has been claimed to be a platform where we do not interfere in the internal matters.
Migration does not merely entail the humanitarian issues discussion, and it does not stop at resettlement. It extends to acknowledgement by the locals, and also the governments must be ready for these new waves of migrants. And here's Edin Koo on Malaysians' very limited discourse on immigration issues.
We are, we are not a developing country anymore. We are a newly industrialized country. Okay, that's, and the next step is becoming a developed society. Yet we have none of the basic and fundamental social foundations to make that kind of transition. To have, for example, a dispassionate, reasonable debate about immigrants. As you are well aware, we have horrifying stories of human trafficking cases going on here. And we have no real concrete policy for any of these things. And there is no broader understanding among the society at large that these things need to be addressed in very sophisticated and cultivated ways. That for there to be a broad understanding that involves, aspects of the humanities, aspects of a more expansive understanding of what immigration is, who immigrants are, for example, we don't have that. We're constantly hit on the head by, UN human rights conventions and, refugee issues, and this is what rights are, and this is what rights should be, these are what the statistics are. I think a broad and humanistic understanding of issues of immigration, we are greatly lacking. People don't talk about this, it seemed to be too intellectually abstract to look at issues of this in expansive ways. So there is really a critical intellectual default when it comes to dealing with these issues. And very much in the same way in Malaysia. If you look at the media, for example, what is their discourse on immigrant issues? It's either hugely melodramatic. I also must take liberals to task for this, because the liberal position is so wet and so soft and based on sentimentality that somehow we have to open our doors constantly to anybody who wants to come. That is not tenable. It simply is not tenable. And it's very interesting because liberals then don't stand on very firm ground. And when the going gets really tough, it's very easy to see so many liberals then doing backflips and becoming completely, completely hardcore right-wing conservatives, you know. Because the ground they were standing on was not very firm anyway. So we are looking to a future where, of course, at one time we had the Chinese and the Indian as members of this, of our nation. You know, when we became a nation, we offered citizenship to the Chinese and the Indians. And there'll come a time when we are going to have to talk about that for the Bangladeshis. The Indonesians, of course, already, you know, as you can see, have nicely assimilated. But the gap is going to get bigger and bigger, of course. And then you'll have the Nepalese, and then you'll have the Myanmarese, right? And you'll have the Cambodians, and then you'll have the Lao. What do you do with the Rohingyas, for example? You know, the Rohingyas are not only victims. It's awful what is happening to the Rohingyas, but you can't always approach the question of the Rohingyas in humanitarian terms and look at them as victims and oppressed peoples. After a while, they also become a statistic, right? And then how are you going to deal psychologically with that kind of statistics? So these are questions that are just smoldering and waiting to happen. But I think we will be able to grapple with them a lot more if we have an intellectual approach to things. And I think in Malaysia, that kind of dialogue can happen very easily because we are all the spawn of transmigratory communities, all of us. And if we are able to remember all of this, then it becomes a lot more close to home.
The 6 million non-citizens in Malaysia right now are going to stay. They're not going to go away. One day, when the economy contracts, our understanding and tolerance on the migration issues will change again. The migrant presence has to be addressed and acknowledged and be extended further than our current melodramatic discourse. At the end of the day, all that these new migrants long for is a place to call home. This is the Evening Edition Migrant Series Far From Home. I'm Rahma Pauzi for BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.